This is the Bald Scientist Podcast, where we talk about science, from the factual to the fictional, and sometimes a bit of both, with the good doctor, One R. Pagan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 8 of the Bald Scientist Podcast. This is, of course, your host, One, wishing you and yours safety, health, and happiness. Before we go on today's episode, I want to thank those of you who have reached out with kind comments and feedback on the last two episodes, my interview with my friend Peter Codron. You know, I'm still amazed at the fact that I was having a conversation with a friend from Australia, right from my home in Pennsylvania. You gotta understand where I'm coming from. Please remember that I was born in 1964. Yes, 6'4", which sadly does not refer to my height, but to the year I was born. And so I thank you for allowing me to nerd out at this fact. Well, moving on. Things are looking up. Despite the immense suffering that millions of people have gone through in the last year or so, things are indeed looking up. Just to begin with, it is warmer out there, at least in my part of the world. I used to be a winter man. I used to love snow and all these type of things. Nowadays, not so much. Also, vaccinations in my part of the world are moving along faster than I'd hoped, and without a doubt whatsoever, that's cheering me up. Speaking of vaccinations, I am very excited to announce that I have set up a really interesting interview with a friend of mine from Twitter, Clarinda, where we will discuss an interesting article that she published recently about science communication, about minimizing the problem of confirmation bias, and about a phenomenon called the filter bubble or the echo chamber effect, which is a very interesting phenomenon. A filter bubble is, quote, a term coined by the internet activist Elie Parisier to refer to a state of intellectual isolation that can result from personalized searches when a website algorithm selectively guesses what information a user would like to see, based on information about the user, such as location, past click behavior, and search history. End quote. By the way, please remember that, as usual, I will post links to the appropriate sources in the show notes. Moving on, I am also very excited to announce that we are very close to begin recording the first of what I hope will be several episodes on imposter syndrome. In this particular adventure, I will be joined by my friends Hattie and Susama as co-hosts. Imposter syndrome is, quote, loosely defined as doubting your abilities and feeling like a fraud. It disproportionately affects high-achieving people who find it difficult to accept their accomplishments. Many question whether they are deserving of accolades. End quote. This is, of course, called a syndrome, but not in the medical or psychological sense. And this is a thing that affects pretty much everyone in all walks of life. And it can manifest itself in a variety of ways. For example, in my case, one of the ways in which it shows is in my dreams. At least 3 to 4 times a year, I have the same recurrent dream. I am an undergrad in university. I'm finishing my degree. And when I apply for graduation, I find that I'm short 2 and only 2 courses to graduate. And those 2 courses are always the same. Okay? Basic mathematics and English. It doesn't take a psychologist for me to figure out what that means. The English part is that, well, I am very self-conscious of the way my accent sounds in English. And the mathematics part is that even though I can manage college mathematics, I would have loved to have the ability to do more advanced mathematics. And one of the things that I used to snap out of it, as it were, is that from time to time, I remind myself of a couple of facts. And it's funny because it takes the form of an internal monologue in which I remind myself that I have a successful career. And as far as the English is concerned, I've written a bunch of technical articles, a few book academic chapters, and a few books, all in English. Thank you very much. Just to give you an example of the things that you have to do to snap out of these things. And I will elaborate more when we record our episode. Also, I am planning to record a future episode on cryptozoology. And my motivation for doing so is that something happened that I'd like to call Thylacine Gate. You see, the thylacine is the so-called Tasmanian tiger who is supposed to be extinct, but recently some people claim to have photographic evidence of its continued existence. The point is that this episode that I'm planning to record is not so much about cryptozoology, although I love the topic, but about how science should be conducted and about simple politeness and, let's face it, human decency. You see, I can't stand bullies in science, religion, or life in general. But we'll talk about that in the episode itself. And as they say, last but not least, be on the lookout for an episode where I interview a young woman doing a graduate degree on planetary science. I'm not telling you her name right now because I forgot to ask for permission prior to recording this episode, but you will know her and her work pretty soon. And now I would like to talk to you about certain things that have come to my overactive mind recently. I'm not going to talk about science, planarians, books, any of my usual topics. I just got myself thinking about certain things lately. But before we go into that, some disclaimers. Keep in mind that I'm not a medical doctor, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, or any other kind of mental health professional. This is just a friend talking to a friend. Okay, that's the serious disclaimer. The more tongue-in-cheek disclaimer is that you should know that I'm very, very good at giving advice and very, very bad at following said advice. You have been warned. I make no claim that any of the things that I'm going to tell you about are particularly new or even original. They have almost been certainly said in one way or another in many places. Still, they are fun to think about, but even more importantly, they can be useful, and that's why I wanted to share them with you. In retrospect, the notion that it's a very good idea to become your own best friend should be implicit as part of the human condition. But I have to admit that I haven't thought about this until very recently. What follows is a few pointers that can help us achieve this goal. And if I'm going to be completely honest with you, I struggle with many of these points. Even though I know in my mind that these are good things to try, it is difficult for me to make them happen. Okay? I guess that what I'm trying to say is that my mind knows what it needs to do, but the body is weak. And so, without further ado, here's 10 practices and a bonus that can help you become your own best friend. Here we go. Okay, number one, try to take care of your physical being. I know that this is genetic advice that all of us should follow, but very few of us actually do. And these are commonsensical things, okay? Be active as much as you can. Eat reasonably well. And in this case, for example, everybody knows that I love my green tea frappuccinos. And I enjoy them, but I ask them, well, I don't know, with stevia instead of actual sugar, low-fat milk, things like that. And if you're my follower on any type of social media, you already know that a couple of days ago, I tried one made with oat milk. I will not judge you if you like oat milk, to each his own, but no, never again. No. Not even a little bit. Not even funny. No. End of story. I'll stop now. Number two. In the same way that you take care of your body, take care of your mind, your mental health. And I am very much aware that this is even more difficult than to take care of your body. Culturally, there's many places where this is like a stigma that people see you as a weak person if you take care of your mind or if you go to a psychiatrist or a therapist or, God forbid, if you dare to take medication for that. So I'm here to tell you that taking care of your mental health is not a sign of weakness. Rather, it's a sign of incredible strength. Moreover, I'm telling you that there's absolutely no freaking shame in that. For example, if you, I don't know, twist your ankle, like what happened to my very own Mrs. Bold Scientist a few days ago, you will take medicine. You wouldn't hesitate to take medication for your pain, right? Second example, you go to the dentist. They have to do a procedure. Would you refuse local anesthetics? I don't think so. You will not. In the same way, if you're suffering from depression, anxiety, or OCD, whatever it is, okay, and you go to a properly trained psychiatrist, and she or he prescribe you a medication for that, you should take it. Let me say it again. There is no freaking shame in that. Number three, forgive others. I am good, even very good, at certain things. And I have to admit that forgiving others is not one of them. And in fact, one thing that I'm very good at is holding grudges. Don't get me wrong. I can forgive mistakes, okay? So mistakes, everybody makes mistakes, including myself, and I have no problem forgiving those, okay? What it's very hard for me to do is to forgive bad intentions, okay? Malice. It's next to impossible for me to forgive malice. That being said, I think I'm fortunate because I can count with the fingers of one hand the people who I have been unable to forgive to date. And with only one exception, the people that I have been unable to forgive have done wrong by my children. You see, if you are nice to me, I'm grateful. If you are nice to one of my children, any of my children, I am pretty much forever yours. The opposite is also true. And to give you an illustration of that, I'm going to point you to a dream that I had not so long ago that I narrated in my blog. I will post a link to the story in the show notes. Number four, forgive yourself. This is ironic because if you think that I'm bad at forgiving others, I'm even worse at forgiving myself. Even though I can honestly tell you that I don't think I've ever felt malice or done anything out of malice against anyone, it's very hard for me to forgive even my honest mistakes. What can I tell you? Number five, read for pleasure. Personally, I've been struggling with this for some time now, but I'm trying to get better. It's weird because I have absolutely no problem reading for work, as in reading for preparing myself for lectures or for my research. But to read for pleasure, it's difficult for me. It is as if I don't think I deserve to relax, which is another point that I will make in a moment. Number six, use your mind. This is, of course, very much related to the previous point. In my case, I am always thinking, and I cannot imagine a life where I would not do it. If you think about it, no pun intended, you will surely realize how truly remarkable it is to be able to think and how truly, frighteningly fragile a mind is. As a scientist, I am sure that the thought is likely controlled by the hard-to-imagine number of connections in our brain, the sheer number of nerve cells. But knowing this does not diminish, does not make it less majestic, precious, and mysterious. And what they say is absolutely true. Just like muscles, if you want a stronger mind, you should use it. Number seven, learn to relax. And right now I'm very much vividly picturing the face that my wife made a few minutes ago when I told her that I was going to give you this advice. You should have seen her. You, of all people, are telling others to relax. Number eight, truly love someone. I am grateful to God, the universe, life, and everything, because I have absolutely no problems in this area. I was raised in a loving family, and my late dad taught me by example how to be a father. He was a great one, and I'd like to think that I'm honoring him by being a good dad myself. I have a family of my own, and I'd gladly give my life for my wife or my kids, as simple as that. There's nothing else to say in this regard. Number 9, keep good secrets. And by this, I mean that you can be your best confidant. Keep good secrets, good things that you and only you and perhaps your God will ever know. For example, sending some money anonymously to someone in need, helping someone without anyone ever knowing. Random acts of kindness do count, like, I don't know, paying for the people behind you at the Starbucks, the coffee shop line. If you see a parking meter about to expire, put a couple of quarters in it. Things like that. Number 10. Have a good conversation or conversations with yourself. Yes, talking to yourself can be healthy. Sometimes doing this will help you realize what's good for you. Okay? It's like bouncing ideas to yourself, if that makes sense. There's a bonus one. Number 11. You're going to love this one. Yell at yourself from time to time. You're the only person who honestly knows your mind and motivations. Most of us have this little thing called a conscience, okay, which tells you when you're doing things wrongly. You may lie and fool other people, but you may try to lie at yourself, but you will never be able to fully fool yourself. One more thing. If you are going to yell at yourself, try to do it when you're alone and preferably with no one within earshot. Make sense? Well, everyone, as always, thank you ever so much for listening to me. Please be on the lookout for future episodes. And I'll see you soon. Oh, one more thing. Just wait until the music fades out. I have a surprise for you. I've posted a few bloopers for your listening pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye. Episodes on... Many question whether they've reserved... Also... In a psychologist, or any kind of mental health. I am not claiming that any of the things the idea that it is a good idea And if I'm going to be completely honest with you, I struggle. I know this is a generic advice that very few. All right, that was the last one. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Take care.